Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of Tribal Council. I'm Chris, and on the other end is... Say your name.
My name. Did I do it? Okay. Did I do it wrong?
That's Ralph, who thinks he's funny. To start tonight's episode, I think I'd be remiss if we didn't briefly acknowledge the passing of Steve Jobs, without whom... this sort of thing doesn't exist, right? I mean, I think that's how you know when you've made it, when one of your products goes from being a proper noun to a common noun, right? Is that would you say that's a mark of achievement?
Yeah, no, I guess I get what you're saying. What was it? Obama said something about how the message that we all got about his passing came via one of his devices for many people.
Yeah. For most people, yeah, exactly. And, yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, it's like, you know, Kleenex or Frisbee or Polaroid. Like, those are all, they're all technically proper nouns, right? They're products, but, you know, people often say Kleenex instead of tissue when they're asking for one, or, you know, Xerox instead of photocopy. And iPod has done the same thing, right? And even more so, podcasting. I mean, that name comes right from the iPod. So, definitely, the world lost an impressive businessman, to say the least. Moving on though, this is a Survivor podcast, not a.
It's not a eulogy
Apple
podcast.
Yeah, right. Yes, it's a. Well, I guess there's a degree of irony in the name Survivor, right there. Let's talk about episode 4. The episode opens with, I guess, Jim and Cochran scheming together. And to be honest, I kind of like that this was the this was the sneak preview from last week. You know, we see Jim and Cochran scheming, and Jim getting a little bit too worked up about the fact that they're doing something finally. And I like that got used right away, because I hate when the teaser comes from something at like minute 45 of the episode, because then I spend the whole episode knowing like, oh, this is coming. And this way, you know, we got the preview out of the way, and now it's all fresh, you know?
I thought for a while you stopped watching Next On.
Me?
Yeah.
No, I never was anti Next On.
Hmm.
Why?
Well, just because it would alleviate you from that problem of like hearing something that may be used in a crucial moment.
I mean, yeah, no, I don't think I ever stopped watching the Next Ons, because I definitely made references to the Next Ons in last season's podcast. Hmm. And we definitely didn't discuss our viewing habits in such granular detail prior to starting this podcast.
I guess. Who was your guy last season?
David.
Dave.
Was that his name?
Yeah.
David.
Could Jim be more like Dave? Is that possible?
Do you think he's too like Dave?
Yeah. He's playing too hard. People are not going to trust him because he's playing so hard. You know, there comes a point where, like, you have to kind of come together to, like, form the alliance. And then the best thing you can do is try to not call attention to anything and not, like, you know, freak out, because it unsettles people. And,
yeah,
you know, Ozzy's right in saying, look, you know, you can't be like this all the time. You know, people are going to start, you know, having issues with it.
I 100% agree. And, I mean, the note I wrote down is Jim wants to make his move too early. And I agree with that. I think that, you know, the difference is, you know, David was stuck on a tribe that refused to play the game at all, and was, you know, was hellbent on ousting Russell in a game where numbers are important. And, you know, it's the irony of that was that they wanted to get him out because they felt like he was, you know, the bad seed or whatever. He wasn't trustworthy. But if you think about it, you know, his first season, the people that made it to the merge with him, they went to the end with him. He took them as far as he possibly could, with the exception of Jason, who was voted out in a situation where he had to vote out one of his own.
Right. I don't know.
Maybe we're talking about last season a little too much, but maybe last season's a little more interesting than this season, too.
Well, this one's still sort of in embryonic stages.
True,
we have to let the plot lines emerge.
We have
no Philip and no Russell Hance to kind of get things cooking immediately.
Well, we've got like what we have is a blend of the two. I mean, Brandon Hance is, you know, he's got a little bit of Russell in him. He's got a little bit of Philip in him too. He's got a little bit of nuts to go with his devious ways.
Well, just in that he's very unpredictable in how the wind is blowing for him at any one moment. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I'll take Philip over Little Hance any day.
And speaking of the Hance, of this instance of the Hance, this version of the Hance, I loved when Michaela was talking about him and in a confessional and says, "Look who his uncle is," and then they immediately cut to a shark. Did you notice that?
I missed it.
It was fantastic. She says it like three times over. Just look who his uncle is. I mean, look who his uncle is. And then they cut to stock footage of a shark swimming around in the ocean. It was fantastic. I loved it.
You know, you were worried about the possibility of this season being, you know, kind of a shot-for-shot remake of Boston Rob's run to the title last year with Ozzy's Tribe, kind of putting him up there and him being indispensable right now, so gonna get carried to the merge and from there on be pretty much unstoppable. And I think Ozzy has more intelligent opposition than Boston Rob had. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I guess in some sense we're sort of seeing a little bit of what, you know, what might have happened had David been put on Boston Rob's Tribe.
What I'm thinking of is not necessarily David. I'm thinking of Dawn, who kind of saw through what Ozzy was trying to do by trying to calm the strategy talk. And it's sort of like subjugates, I guess is the word I'm looking for. Like, sort of trying to keep people under the thumb that he's got them under right now. And Dawn's kind of like, well, that's not going to work for me.
Do you really think that Ozzy was making those statements as a strategy choice?
I think whether or not it's true, I like Dawn's attitude. I like that she is challenging the status quo, and I think
she has to. The status quo is going to get her out early.
But no, there are people who just sat and allowed the status quo to continue, and were terrible at trying to, you know, cook up alternatives. You know, they were just sort of like, well, I'm on the other side of the numbers, so that's it.
Well, yeah. Well, and then I mean, the people who are, the people who are on the good side of the status quo, you should try to shake it up until you get close to the point where, you know, you are going to end up on the wrong side of it. But yeah, I agree with you that it's good that she's seeing through it, whether there's actually anything to see through or not. I got the impression though that that was a genuine, just sort of like, chill out, Jim, sort of moment for Ozzy there. I think he was just, you know, he'd had enough of like, okay, we get it. You want to talk strategy, and you know, maybe that's not really that big a deal right now, which it shouldn't be for somebody who's sitting on the good side of a 5-person alliance. And that's why I think it makes Ozzy nervous and makes Ozzy a little bit squeamish.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I don't know what's left before we get to the elimination challenge.
There's two things. There's Brandon just going, you know, Waco on his alliance and just, you know, outing it to Edna, going over to Michaela, talking to her again. I mean, at this point, this is just Brandon, though. This isn't Brandon having an episode. This is just Brandon.
Yeah, I think that's why I didn't make note of it. Well, you bring it up and I'm like, oh yeah, I guess that did happen, but I'm just kind of used to it by now with him.
Right, yeah. This is just called Wednesday for Brandon. And then the other thing that I wrote a note down about, this is completely minuscule, but they were overt about giving out the bathing suits this time, which I kind of appreciated. You know, last season, like, they sort of all just suddenly appeared to have all these bathing suits that were of matching colors to their tribe color, but there was there was nothing overt about it. And then, and I remember Stacy pointing out that their bathing suits last season, she's like, oh, like, all those girls' bathing suits are Victoria's Secret, and I was thinking to myself, well, Victoria's Secret does have a relationship with CBS. CBS airs their fashion show every year.
I wouldn't know that. So, I certainly am not paying attention at all to the fact that Victoria's Secret has a public fashion show on CBS every year. I certainly don't. I'm not aware of that at all. No, I certainly don't look ahead to find out when it's on my DVR and schedule that to be recorded.
Yeah, methinks thou dost protesteth too much.
Perhaps.
So I appreciated that it was overt this time. And it makes me a little less judgmental about the fact that everybody shows up in their personality clothing or whatever it is that Post calls it when they show up in suits and stuff like that.
Dawn's complaining about, you know, having to get into a swimsuit and being Mormonly modest and, like, looking at the other young people and being, like, you know, like, worried about her body. For a 40-year-old, she's got it going on. Let's be real. Come on,
man.
Oh,
yeah. The first thing I said in the premiere episode when I was watching it, I turned to Stacy and I said, is it me or is that Dara Torres? She looks exactly like Dara Torres, the 42-year-old Olympian swimmer, right?
Like medalist. 42-year-old.
Yeah, silver medalist, I believe.
Medalist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, she facially looks like her, but she's also cut like her. I mean, mm-hmm. Maybe not nearly as much so. She doesn't have the swimmer's shoulders or whatever. But otherwise, she's in shape, as we see later in the episode.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what she's got to complain about. She's got it going on. She doesn't have professor body. She's like, you know.
Well, you know, she probably is experiencing a more normal version of what Brandon's been going through, you know, the conflict between, you know, being modest and honoring her God, etc.
And rocking her 40-year-old hot bod.
Exactly.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dawn. Do your thing.
Yeah, exactly. What did you think of the elimination challenge?
Yawn.
Yeah. What was particularly yawn-worthy was it appeared to be set up as a, I was actually asking myself, I actually asked the question aloud when they started. I was like, is this a turn-taking challenge or is this a rapid-fire challenge? And it appeared that it was rapid-fire based on Probst's sort of like ready-go thing, but it looked like they sort of functionally like alternated throwing, maybe to avoid colliding, I don't know what. Meanwhile, every time Papa Bear hit one, he would, like, momentarily celebrate, and I wanted to be like, dude, you're behind. Quit celebrating. Get another bag in the air.
Yeah, and certainly could have helped him at the end, it being a 9-9 game. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that it deserves a whole lot of analysis, but, no. Every time they cut away and you saw, like, this litter of bags on the ground, you're like, okay, this is very creatively edited.
Right. I think, the other thing I wrote down was, I wonder, is going to Redemption Island first an advantage? I mean, we've now seen the two times they've done Redemption Island, the person who's gone at the beginning has put together a string of victories. Granted, her string right now is two, barely enough to even call it a string, but I wonder, is there an advantage to being the first one out and sort of like, you know, the stigma that comes with being the first person out and then, you know, the indignance that will build in you for the 3 days that you sit there alone?
I think we're suffering from a very, very small sample size. And
certainly.
If I had to speculate, I would say no. I would say it is not to your advantage to be gone early, to forge fewer relationships, than people who are staying in the game. You know, maybe in that second round of Redemption Island, it's fine because you're creating jury connections. but at the same time, that makes you more dangerous at the end of the game, so you'll have to be even more reliant on your ability to
survive a vote.
It'd be harder for you to rely on your own merits to win challenges to stay alive, because everyone's going to look at you and be like, yeah, I don't like that you just spent 3 days talking to each juror that just passed through there.
Mm-hmm. So now we go back to camp, and there's only two things I have notes about between here and the immunity challenge. And the two things are about Edna and Cochran.
I have three notes. One is Edna, one is Cochran, and a third note, which is really random.
Okay. Well, what I think is so great about this, and you know, in a otherwise pretty lackluster episode, is the juxtaposition of the two of them. Cochran, I think, is beginning to really come into his own in terms of being a good social and witty player, showing his chops from having watched 22 seasons of the show. In his pitch to Dawn, I mean, he plays her like a fiddle. He lets her think that it's her idea to vote out, what was it, Elise? Is that the person they were targeting?
Yeah, my horse.
Is she your horse?
That's my horse.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he lets her come up with Ozzy, and then he does a great job of sort of brushing Ozzy aside without making it like sound like he's like in Ozzy's pocket or something like that, and then gets her to come up with Elise as the target when Elise is exactly the person he wanted to be the target. I mean, I thought that was, you know, just a fantastic pitch on his part to coax her into believing that it was her own idea. And Stacy said the exact same thing as I was writing it down.
I did notice that. I will remain unimpressed by Cochran until he survives another tribal council, because, you
That's
know,
true.
Last vote was him or Papa Bear, so this vote should be him, especially after Dawn performed the way she did. So
yep.
If he can get himself off at the next tribal council, then I will throw laurels upon him, but not until then. I mean, I see what you're saying, but I'm not as impressed by the what you consider these Jedi mind tricks.
He doesn't have the results to go with the little bit of ingenuity he should.
Yeah, no, I mean, at least he didn't do it like really awkwardly. Like we've seen a lot of people try to get people, like Brandon when he tried to throw Michaela or whatever. Like, he did it horribly, like, obviously. But, you know, we should expect more of Cochran, so I guess in that respect it's nice to see someone execute a playbook that works.
Well, so. And especially considering how we've seen him in terms of other aspects of just his sociability being awkward. You know, I don't know, I was just very impressed with that approach of Dawn and just making it feel so natural for her when really what he was doing was going over there to recruit her to join this little sub-alliance or whatever you want to call it. That's obviously short a person if they're going to make anything happen.
So who's going to be their swing? Jim, Cochran, Dawn versus Ozzy, Elise?
The only person is Whitney, I think.
Yeah, but Keith and Whitney are like a package. Aren't
yeah,
they?
But I think Keith is more likely to show allegiance to Ozzy, and thus to Elise. So I think the best person would actually be Whitney.
And are they going to figure that out? What's your prediction?
Well, I mean, I think they might figure it out, but I also just because she's the best person doesn't mean she'll do it. I mean, I think she's the best person in a, you know, lesser of a bunch of evils kind of way. You know, I don't think there's a good chance of getting her to swing. But you never know. I mean, it's certainly possible. You know, Cochran can maybe make a pitch on, you know, his wits, you know, for puzzle play in challenges versus what does Elise bring besides, you know, eye candy.
An ethnic mixed bag.
Okay. So it's the variety pack of
multi-raciality.
Okay.
No, I don't know. Yeah, Edna was Edna got a pretty bad edit, and then I'm sure it's at least half as bad as they're saying it is. And I've been around people and worked around people like that where they continue to talk purely because they're uncomfortable with letting the air be filled with silence.
Yeah.
And it's mind-numbing. And to have to live on the island starving, you know, exposed to elements, and have this yapping chihuahua, it has got to be intolerable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and the thing I just wrote down was read your tribe, Edna. Like, she's actually put into a position of great strength by Brandon, because, you know, the most important thing you can know is how you're viewed in your tribe, I think. You know?
Yeah, I mean, no, I agree.
Short, you know, in terms of what you can actually control, I mean, you can't control where you actually are in your tribe, but, like, it's knowing where you are in your tribe, and thus being, and then being put in a position where now that you have that information, I can do something about it. She's just executing in such a poor way. You know, she's not reading her tribe.
Yeah, she's not executing. That's the problem. She's not attempting to execute. She's just, you know, she's like, you know, it's like a furious dog paddle with no destination in mind.
Right. Yes. There's no game plan. It's just, you know, oh crap, I'm in a bad spot. I need to do something about it. So I'm just going to go out there and try to be everybody's best friend by means of, you know, striking up conversation with them at every possible moment.
Do you have any idea what my third note was? It was Edna, it was Cochran, and
I don't know, something about Stacy?
Something about Stacy.
Is it Stacy's reaction to Edna trying to warm up to her?
Nope.
Is it the filtering the water?
Nope.
Oh, what is it?
It was the scene where they're doing their laundry on the beach. And, like, Stacy holds up, like, what looked to be, like, a pair of pants. And there's just, like, dark brown stains in the seat of the pants.
Oh, no! Really?
I don't know if anyone who caught this, and if you're listening out there and you would like to corroborate my story, I would be happy if you would do so. But
yeah, tweet us. What is it? Tribal Podcast. Tweet us at Tribal Podcast.
It was her final indignity to have skid marks on her final episode, or at least on her final day on the tribe.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know.
I did not notice that at all.
I thought about typing it out, and then I realized nothing else was going to come out of the segment, so I was like, I'll type it in and see what happens.
Yeah. I did like how, I guess it was later on when Coach came over to her and talked to her, and immediately after Coach walked away, she broke the fourth wall, stared at the camera, and was, you know, swore and was just like, I don't believe an ounce of that crap.
It was a Jim moment on The Office? or is it an Angela moment?
No, it's Jim. Jim's the one who always breaks the fourth wall. which, as we noted last season, rarely happens outside of the conventional
set. Grant had his moment, right? What was Grant's moment last season?
It was Grant and Rob. It was when Grant and Rob turned to the camera when Steve and Phil had their race wars, and Phil played the race card, and Grant turned to the camera and said something to the effect of, did he just bring in the race card? Did he just play the race card? Or did he just say the N-word? Or what? How did we end up here? The look on his face was priceless. It was absolutely priceless. This was not the place I expected this to end up.
Sort of an anchor man. This really escalated quickly. You know,
yes.
Brick killed a guy.
Right. So let's talk about the immunity challenge.
And reward of chicken. Also, the reward of chicken.
Yeah. The first thing I wrote down, and this was before we found out that it was going to be two guys, one girl, was would Papa Bear have been of value here to Savaii? And based on the two guys, one girl breakdown, I think no. And also based on the makeup of Upolu, I don't think so, because I think Well, I guess Zavai didn't even have to use Ozzy, and you go probably go to Ozzy before you go to Papa
Bear.
Yeah.
No, I think you would go Papa Bear. This required just like an insanely stable base, and yeah. Ozzy's like that agile speed guy, and not
yeah, that's true. Yeah. Ozzy's the tall, lanky guy from Blades of Steel, not the short, stout guy from Blades
of Steel. No, you're thinking of ice hockey.
Oh, was it just ice hockey?
Yeah,
there three that
was the
guys?
Game ice hockey. It was the three different guys, and Pop Bear is the fat, stout guy, and Ozzy's the
right.
tall, skinny guy.
Who had a killer slap shot but could barely get up and down the ice.
Oh, my God, he labored. It was great. And then the little guy would just fly around, get you the puck, and then you would pass it to the fat guy.
Right, yeah. Skinny guy could get everywhere in a heartbeat.
No, I like that connection. That's great. I didn't think of that. That's really good.
Yeah, it's always good to mix in a pop culture reference or two.
Yeah.
Even if the pop culture reference majorly dates us.
I typed out a pregame prediction of Albert winning it for Upolu, but realizing that they stacked on the guys first, that was a foolish conclusion. Of course they would try to chase out strongest first.
See, I wondered about that, and I was trying to think, like, I mean, what is the best strategy here? And at first I was thinking it was, you know, the key is to get somebody eliminated as quickly as possible.
No, I think the key is you got to get them all tired so that you can try to break them down, you know, in the end. You can't have
you
someone
think
standing
endurance
there.
Endurance is the key?
Yeah, no, it's endurance. It's absolutely endurance. Like, it's a straw that breaks the camel's back thing where you have to, like, get them going, and at some point they're going to break, but you have to get them to the point where they're ready to break. And you don't do that by loading one person only. Like, I think spreading it out is the smartest strategy.
I agree with you. I still think, though, that the first person you should target once you've built up at least a decent base that's going to wear on them, say, you know, for the guys, say 80 pounds, for the girls, say 40 or 60 pounds, something like that. Then I think you then want to just pick off somebody as quickly as possible. Because then I feel like the game then swings in your favor so quickly when one person is eliminated.
We need you to create a mathematical model of
I was thinking
rates
about
of
that.
Tiring versus
it all comes down to whether or not this is just simply a threshold thing or if if endurance is really a big factor. If it's just a threshold thing, then it doesn't even matter. You could do one bag a piece to each of them, or not one bag, one round a piece to everybody and just keep going around the cycle. Or you could run up one person, then go run up a second person, run up a third person. If it's just about threshold, then the team that's got the higher combined threshold is going to win. No matter what strategy you take.
Yeah, no, but you're ignoring the fact that there is an endurance factor involved.
Yeah, but I guess I feel like if you eliminate the weakest one first, then when that person drops out, there's less bags hitting the ground, which means there's more bags still being held up. Does that make sense? You know, when that person, say it's Dawn you target first. And you build up, I think you build up more or less balanced, again, applying a little more weight to the men than you do to the women. And then you start targeting one person, I think. And if you target Dawn, and she goes out, she goes out at 100 pounds or so, or 140, whatever it was. And then, when she drops out, there's only 140 of weight that's no longer being supported. Whereas if a guy drops out...
Yeah, I understand your premise. You know, it's this thing where I'm thinking now about, like, the amount of weight I've squatted at one time. And, like, you know, I've squatted, you know, 350. I'm sure at one point I've been able to squat over 4. And so, like, you can put that weight on your shoulders. It's possible. But at some point, having to hold, you know, 160-plus pounds on your shoulders for 20-something minutes... That's got to take a toll on you. So, I don't know. I don't think there's much to complain about in terms of strategy. And the way it ended up, having the two oldest women on the island...
Yeah, that's true.
...battling it out was really, it was dramatic. And that was really the high point of the show for me.
Well, and I think Dawn, you know, it's funny, I thought about it also, like, it's almost a good thing, once we found out the breakdown of two men and one woman, it's almost a good thing that they voted out Papa Bear and not, you know, considering Dawn would have been, I mean, obviously Cochran was the more talked about choice, but certainly all three of them were the ones that were being considered last week when they voted out. And if they'd voted out Dawn, I think they lose this challenge.
Yeah, you know, I don't
if
think
they have to
trot
Whitney
or Whitney
Elise
or
Sophie.
Well, it would have been Sophie. Sophie's the house. Oh, no,
Sophie,
Sophie's on the other
Sophie
team.
Is in the other tribe. Yeah,
Sophie's on the other team.
Exactly.
Yeah, their other girl was Semhar, and she's gone.
Yeah. So if they have to trot out Whitney or Elise, they lose that challenge for sure, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I actually really like the challenge. I think I like it because of there's this, you know, Probst talked about a little bit the hero goat thing, but there's also this, I don't know, something about it that's, even though it's a decidedly individual setup, it still feels very team-like in the sense that, like, everybody is doing their best to just sort of, like, channel energy your way, and I don't know, something about that I really like.
Yeah, and there's certainly, you know, it was dramatic because the two people who were left had something to prove to their tribe in terms of why you should keep me around, and
yep.
That was kind of the subplot running underneath it all, and that was really good to add to some of the drama.
Indeed, indeed. So let's go back to camp briefly here. I only have one note, and that's about Coach and Brandon.
Yeah, I was so impressed by Coach.
Oh, it was fantastic. I mean, it was like a parent scolding a child. Just stop it. Stop it. And it was so great because he realized, like he snuffed it out before it even became a thing. You know, like, you're going to take the word over from a person who is on their last leg and has no viable options versus someone you're in an alliance with? I mean, it was great.
Yeah, and it's almost unfortunate because, you know, those deceptions of people believing, you know, the person who's on death row kind of make those scrambles worthwhile, but having this veteran player in the game squash it kind of kills some of the joy of watching Brandon muck it up potentially, because I think he really could have, you know, yeah, created some disorder that would have destabilized the union that they made. But
well, and the irony is that Brandon is the foil that Russell used to use, you know?
Right.
Brandon is the person that Russell would be feeding this sort of stuff to create the drama that ends up, you know, that ended up getting Russell from being on the wrong side of 8 versus 4 to the finals.
So my question for you is did they choose the right person? Is Stacy over Edna the right choice?
I don't know. I think it's a little early to be making loyalty choices like that.
The thing is, she's not even considered part of, like, the vital five that they made. You know, I'm talking about Edna.
Right.
So what's the problem in voting out Edna and keeping this strong, clearly, you know, capable of supporting her team, woman around?
I think the thing that also comes in that was not discussed much, it was discussed a little bit, but Probst did not really hammer at home, you know, during that group therapy session at Tribal Council, you know, she says, oh, I'm open, you ask me anything, I'll tell you. Like, and my immediate thought, and Stacy echoed it as a psychologist, was, that's not openness. Like, ask me anything and I will give you the answer is not openness. That's like, I'll answer a question. Openness is like, you freely share, not you share when told to share, you know? And it was, I thought it was maybe indicative of what her relationship is like with the rest of the tribe, you know? Edna was the only one who voiced that she felt like, you know, she couldn't get Stacy to open up to her. But on the other hand, it didn't seem like she had a relationship with anybody other than what's her name on Redemption Island?
Christine. Yeah, it just strikes me like, you know, Stacy's like very no nonsense, and when she was, you know, ended up on the outs of this alliance, it's not like she was gonna scramble her way to try to get back in people's graces. It's kind of like take me or leave me, and that was it for her. It seems
right.
like to me.
Right. You had to love Coach busting out the warrior spirit line at Tribal Council. I mean, what's so great is when he says that, and whenever any time anything like that happens at Tribal Council, like, they always cut to a shot of Probst just lighting up, like, oh yeah, this is the stuff. You know, like, when he said that, there was something last week or 2 weeks ago that somebody said that was of similar sort of just, like, good Tribal Council fodder. And they cut to Probst, and Probst just lights up, like, all right, here we go, this is the good stuff. And, you know, Coach brought it on a platter for him. You know, if we're talking about evaluating warrior spirit, then no question. you know, Stacy cannot be considered.
Have you been working on your coach?
No, why?
It's good. That's really good. Oh, right. You're really channeling his warrior spirit. Not to belabor that. What do you make of Brandon's breakdown? I kind of made note of him saying it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Like, him saying that, saying, like, I should be forgiven for all of my ridiculousness in the past, and you just have to rely on me in the future. And in this game, it's like everything you do sort of is like this package deal, and it all comes back to you eventually. And I'm not sure how anyone could forget his chaos that he's trying to sow.
I disagree a little. I didn't interpret that statement that way. I didn't take it as that you should just forgive me for the past statement. I took it as a statement relating to his quest per se to redeem the family name, whatever. And that he's worried about perception. You know, it sounds like there was a lot of backlash for Russell and for the family or whatever, based on perception of how he played and whether or not he was, you know, a sleazebag or whatever, when Russell came back from having been on the show. And it appears that this has tormented him a little bit, or at the very least affected him. And I think it's in that vein that he's talking about it. And I think this is not how you start, it's how you finish, is almost unrelated to the game. I think it's more just about his own little saga in his head of how this, how it all ties together between him and Russell and all that.
Yeah, I like the idea of there being this idea in his brain that somehow, and something he could do on that show is going to change the way people perceive the Hance family, as if the actions of Russell we would ever, like, transcribe upon innocent bystanding members of his family. Like, that's clearly one man.
Or let alone even Russell in the real world, you know? I think the majority of people who watch the show enough to know who Russell is also, I think, understand that, you know, like, Russell on the island is different from Russell in the real world. Maybe it's not, but, like, at the very least, I think anybody deserves the benefit of the doubt in terms of, you know, not taking what you know of them from the show or from the island and assuming that this is how they live their lives in general.
Yeah.
But then again, this is also two poker players who, you know, would go after each other's throats at a poker table.
And then
share a beer and a burger.
Have afterwards. a bro hug it out, you know.
Exactly.
That's a good point. That's a good point. The lies that we would tell.
We are not a representative sample size.
The value judgments we have during the game do not apply to outside the game.
Exactly. But
all right,
we're not exactly representative.
Final note.
I got one more thing I want to say. I love that Rick finally made the show, and the only reason he made the show is because Jeff specifically
pointed him out. Yeah, no, I was like, Jeff, what are you doing? Like, clearly, you don't have enough to talk about, so you're just lobbing these little bombs out there, hoping someone will, like, you know, lay it all out. Oh, what's bothering you? Like,
well, he paused after he. He paused after he addressed Rick, and I half expected the next thing out of his mouth to be like, did you find the island okay? By the way, we started the season without you. I hope you don't mind. You know? I mean, And then Rick's reaction to the question, he paused for so long, I thought he might try to get through one more episode without having said anything on camera. I mean, it was amazing. I literally was like, he might not answer. We might not hear from him till episode 7. The guy's been a ghost on the island, which, I mean, not a bad strategy, as we've seen from past seasons.
You know, he's kind of got like an aura of Curly from City Slickers, where he's like kind of like this lone ranger.
Oh, yeah.
On the
day
horse.
Ain't over yet.
Where's the toothpick? Like, can we just go full Curly for Rick?
Oh, yeah. I know I'm not supposed to pick a new horse, but, I mean, my horse is out. He's my new horse. I love Rick. The guy, like I said, he's a ghost on the island, and, I mean, you gotta love the guy. He just sort of sits there and lets everybody run around and be crazy, and ultimately he's in the alliance he needs to be in. He's not ruffling anybody's feathers.
He's Mr. You know, Dependable. He's probably, like, how would you,
exactly. I imagine he's a bit of an ox him? In the challenges.
Yeah.
So, why not?
The council ends with this ridiculous idea that somehow everyone voted her off, but we're going to give her a hug anyways.
That was so silly.
What in the world made you think that this was going to happen, Coach? Like, seriously.
Well, I think the only reason the idea even comes up is because of the fact that she was the one battling it out to the end in the challenge, and then we turn around and voted you out, and, you know, it's not because of that, it's because of other stuff or whatever, it's the politics of the tribe, whatever. And, you know, I think, you know, it was what Coach said earlier, you know, warrior spirit. We can't question a warrior spirit. And I think it was genuine from Coach. I think he wanted to honor that warrior spirit or whatever. You know, he just didn't seem to realize that, you know, he was going to get brushed aside. You know, I think you get brushed aside by the majority of players in that situation, and Stacy certainly is not at the bottom of that list. You know, Stacy is definitely at the top of the list of people who will brush you aside if you attempt to hug her after voting her out.
Like, they could have, like, not voted her out and given her a hug, be like, hey, we kept you around. She still would have been like, bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like,
oh, yeah. Well, I'm supposed to be all happy because you guys kept me?
All right, let's put
you guys threw me a bone?
Let's put a bow on it.
Well, there's not much... there was one thing teased next week. Coach going nuts about being called Benjamin. How is it possible that such a idiosyncrasy has escaped the camera for two plus seasons?
And then it's everywhere, instantly.
And then it's become like
somehow it's on
an issue.
Somehow it's on Redemption Island with Christine and Stacy.
What do you mean?
They're talking about it at the Elimination Challenge. Like, they both say Benjamin. There's a cut of them both saying Benjamin.
Oh, that's right. Oh yeah, and then Probst calls him it, and that's interesting. Well, I imagine Probst calls him it because he loves nothing else than to stoke the coach fire, and the other two, they have no love lost.
No,
for Coach.
No love lost. Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up our episode, episode 4. And if you want to contact us, you can follow us on Twitter at Tribal Podcast, or you can email us. The address is podcast@tc.vanby.net. Any parting words, Ralph?
I look forward to next week with this food challenge that should be spicy.
Oh, yeah, that was definitely interesting looking, too. All right, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.